with us about how we report the DNA test results and what our requirements on standardization there might be in terms of embedding those results into the genetic evaluations.
Skip made a slide one, although it would be fun to give it to you. I'm trying. You know, a couple of years ago at BIF, I spent most of my time telling people I'm not retiring despite what they read in a Deep Magazine article. And this year I found that we had an advisory council meeting for NBCEC, and they surprised me with a cake that for the first time this year had the number 60 in my name in the same sentence. But I proudly voted under 60 because I'm only 59 years, 355 days old. Bear that in mind. I am still a young man. The title up there has a question mark. The title in your proceedings does not. This is the correct one. I'm not going to get up here and tell you this is what we are going to do or try to make some kind of a rule or law that needs to be followed. This is a question mark. And I want to introduce this topic with some of the information that we heard earlier today as we were playing those little games, which I thought was great. In terms of the survey, 75% plus of the people in the room said they had a fairly good understanding of EPDs. And now when that question went up there, you could hear the heartbeats accelerate on people like myself and Keith Bertrand and whatnot. But we did well, 75%. The educational process has worked very well. 81% scored a 4 or a 5 on their understanding of DNA. Now, the question wasn't really worded to the nature that we could understand what they didn't understand. They probably are thinking this DNA technology is very confusing. Microsatellite SNPs, linkage disequilibrium. We have bombarded the industry with terminology that we take courses to teach our graduates and undergraduates what that stuff actually is. But 81% is a very large number. But you know, it's going to get easier. How many of you have had a blood test? Not of your cattle, but of yourself. In the last period of years or 2 years or whatever. When you see those results, when you go into the doctor and you ask the doctor, how did I do? Do you want him to spend a half hour explaining how cholesterol is measured? You just want to know, did I pass or fail, right? Well, it's going to get easier with the DNA technology simply because the technology is providing greater success in finding genes. And I want to talk about that possibility of this getting easier. One thing I want to introduce the talk with as well in terms of sensitizing you to this topic is we spent many, many years dealing with inbreed EPDs. And we published, I don't remember how many breeds, individual data sets separated EPDs. If you think back a little, that period of time, what was the biggest criticism of within-breed EPDs? Dave?
Weren't standardized. Couldn't compare breeds.
Couldn't compare breeds. So USDA, the Animal Research Center, then launched this across-breed EPD table that would help us adjust these values. And the advantage that they had was that an EPD, even though it wasn't on the same base, was at least conceptually the same thing from one to the other of those within breed EPD systems. 75% of the audience today said we needed to get to multi-breed EPDs. Now, what do you think the rationale for that is? We want to be able to compare animals fairly across all breeds, all crossbreds, and all composites, so that the selection decision is a fair one. So let's keep those things in mind as we ask this question about, what's it called? Yes, I am.
No question.
All right, we have, let's think about the DNA. We have several tests now that are being made up of many SNPs in those panels. And this is the value that's starting to be generated by all the effort put into DNA technology. And when we first started seeing reports, I'm not even going to ask what the laser is. When we started seeing reports, we were getting things like genotypes. We had to explain to people, CG, CG. CC's, GG, what did that mean? Or, in a rather clever marketing ploy, we got numbers of stars or a summary of the... but all of this is giving way to numeric representation because we're just getting too much information in the individual SNPs to sit back and digest them. It's almost like having this plethora of EPDs that we currently have and saying, you know, the best way to handle that is to meld them down into ERTs and even better yet, maybe get down to index selection or decision support. So we're maturing in this particular area to where we're almost creating too much individual information to present, which means we need to look for an alternative. And the alternative is obviously a numeric score. So where are we currently? We have three prominent DNA companies that provide DNA tests, and we currently have three different reporting schemes. Okay, now, think back about our within-breed EPD and the confusion that we had to overcome when we were talking to the industry about what an EPD means, but no, you can't compare them across breeds. Here's the scoring system, as best I understand it, and we do have representatives from each of the DNA testing companies here, so I hope they hop in if I make a mistake. For tenderness, for example, Igenity has chosen to represent their particular test scores on a 1 to 10 scale. Bovagen has put out what are additive effects, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. And MMI, when they launched their new panel tests, presented to us what they called MGVs, which are molecular genetic values or total genetic values. Let's think about Igenity. On this 1 to 10 score, it was actually based on some of the haplotype effects that were estimated in the validation and combined together to get a genotypic score. A whole bunch of new words that we aren't familiar with thinking about here, but the concept here is it was built on the premise that we could come up with an additive value for a particular trait. But the scale, 1 to 10, is constant regardless of what trait you're going to be looking at in any panels produced. And so it's not in the unit of the trait. So if you're looking at the difference between a 7 and an 8 in that particular scale, you have to know something, some kind of a benchmark, just like we did back in the old days with EPDs, as to what that meant in terms of the difference in performance. And they're going to be faced with a very interesting question the next time they get a test, a new SNP put into that particular panel. And that's whether to hold the scale constant or to expand it. Where's our Igenity people? Way in the back. That's going to be an important decision that organization makes. Because if they don't expand the scale, then that means that 8 on the previous scale and an 8 on this scale is going to be different. And we're going to need to have an educational program to address that. Okay? So that's the first thing. A 1 to 10 score, the scales, takes it out of the units of the trait, and so you have to adjust that in terms of your thinking. And we have to wait to see how it expands with new information is added. Lovagen predicts or uses what are called genetic. Is it genetic or genotypic? Genetic. Genetic TVs, they're actually publishing breeding values in the context that what has been done is those same haplotype effects that were used to create the genotype effects in identity analysis that was done at a validation was provided back to them. And they left it on a scale of the trait. 0 is where they put their base points. We're not going to have any poor animals. 0 is the worst. And negative 2.2 pounds, which is good for tenderness, is the other end of the extreme for those genotype effects, or genotypic effects. The scale is in the unit of the traits, which is good because you can compare. It is a breeding value, not the ETD, which means we have to have it to get back to something that we think about relative to ETDs. And unless they do something, this particular range will expand as they add new SNPs, because it will just add more information to the ETD panel. MMI, in terms of putting out their molecular genetics values, were faced with the problem of having a very large SNP panel for many of the traits that they came out with. And they reported what is a genetic value. Whether it's molecular or not, what a genetic value is a combination of additive, dominance, and epistatic effects. That's all of the genetics that impact the performance of an animal. This is the additive part on the left. So on the right, we typically have talked to you about that as the non-additive effects. And the traditional education that we've provided here at BIF over the years is we select on the additive, we look at mating strategies for the non-additive, and we use the entire thing if we wanted to predict phenotypes. Okay, so all of the components are in there. The various components have different, in terms of how we address them strategically, different components have different strategies associated with them. So that's the genetic value. So what? All right? Identity, you get a score back of 7 for tenderness. Ovagen has tested the dam and has a minus 0.5. For decades, we were able to answer this question with ETDs. Well, I want all of you in this room to identify those people from the various DNA companies and get us this answer. Okay? If you don't have Ovagen here and you put the molecular genetic value, we still can't answer this question. And to me, we have an opportunity to make things a lot easier if we start to think about capitalizing on the fact that 75% of you understand ETDs, but 81% don't understand this concept. We are moving towards numeric scores, which is a positive step. Now we have to address the question, do we want to have this as what we exist with the inability to predict up or down a pedigree, or do we want to start to think about standardization? Let's look into the future then. We had a meeting the other day where we addressed the idea that we should be looking at putting molecular information into the calculation of EPDs. And it was a very good meeting. We had a lot of the industry involved in that particular technology, breed associations, et cetera, represented. And the idea is, if we're going to move this forward, step alongside with the other technologies and capitalize on the educational programs that we've had in the past, let's start thinking about ways to make this a simpler technology to understand. You are our consumers, all of you out there that produce and breed cattle. And the we of this is the NVCEC, the molecular genetic companies, and other people who are involved in delivering you information for breeding decisions. So let's start looking at trends in DNA information. We came to VIF many years into animal science, and we heard about this new technology and how it was allowing us to look for candidate genes and within those genes identify variants that impacted the phenotypic expression of our animals. Now, we weren't very successful at finding those mutations per se, but as you see from the panels of tests that are available today, with some of them associated with gene names, that we have, in fact, identified regions in the chromosome that we can track from one generation to the next and predict and understand differences in the phenotypic variation we see. They've been validated in many cases, and we have some confidence in them. Well, now you're starting to hear about a new thing, genome-wide scans. The fact that we have SNP panels that allow us to look at a lot of regions in the bovine genome. In fact, many SNPs was the strategy MMI employed to build their panels. We're going to end up in cases now where we have mostly unknown genes, certainly unknown mutations, but numeric scores. And then, because there are scientists in reproductive physiology, scientists in meat biology, scientists in lactation biology, when these regions are identified with these genome-wide scans, these guys are going to start looking for genes again. Because understanding the biology is what science is about. When we get to this point, we have a very productive tool. We had a productive tool here. We got a very productive tool here. As we come down here, it's going to even get better. Now, what it means, however, is we're going to have a mixture of marked regions. We don't know much about what's in there other than it contributes to genetic variation. We're going to have known mutations, or at least closely linked markers to those mutations. It's what I call residual marker effects, which means in this region somebody may have discovered a gene, but we still may have other variation in that region. And then all of the remaining genetic variation that is inherited left to explain. Can we take where this is going relative to DNA information and project some way of getting the understanding of the results to a simpler level? Another thing that's been considered, and we must consider it, is whether or not this technology has the ability to explain enough variation now or in the future that we can start to set aside this infrastructure for routine data collection and start doing some other uses of that money that's invested there and enhance selection in other fashions. Well, how are we going to decide that? Well, here's a simple scale, 0 to 1. It's either in how much variation we explain, 100% or 0%, or the accuracy of the test, whether it's 0 or 100 or 1 in this case. And it's just a simple matter deciding that we cross that threshold. And that's just an economic question. If we explain all the variation genetically, then this routine data collection we go through may not be necessary. Phenotypic data collection will continue to be necessary to reassess these tests periodically. But we have an opportunity to say, well, someday, maybe we can replace that strategy. Well, we are nowhere near that now. And so, I am going to retire in 8 years. We are not going to get there by then, in my opinion. So we need to consider phenotypic data collection and structure over at least the foreseeable future as still a necessity. But someday, maybe not.
So likely, we're going to continue to collect routine data. We'll never invest in collecting a very expensive data. And we are going to have to start to generate reference populations to reassess the DNA technology periodically and to do validation and assessment. Phenotypic data is going to continue to be very important. Well, what do we have to consider then in terms of making the end result of that technology and the technology we have for multi-breed evaluation more consistent and easier to understand and educate with? I think these are the only possibilities. We either collect routine data, yes or no. We either have DNA, yes or no, or we have DNA markers, yes or no. If we're down in that area and we find a trait that we believe is important, and a good example here is something like healthfulness of beef products, healthfulness to human consumers, then we have to ask the question, what strategy should we employ to generate a genetic evaluation? A very expensive trait to measure, something we aren't going to do routinely. And so, in my opinion, what we're going to do here is to focus our efforts on getting good reference populations and considering a different strategy for genetic evaluation. This is the current situation for some traits. We have phenotypes, but we don't yet have marker panels against them. Okay? This is a transient situation. We are going to get markers on more and more traits, so the number of traits where we end up in that scenario is going to be limited. So you might ask the question, why are we continuing to develop our EPD programs? And the answer to that is, we need to have those kind of programs in existence as we start to generate molecular data before we cross that threshold to get a very good estimate of a merged evaluation for this situation right here. But let's consider this one first. This one's going to be a case, I think, for many traits. The example of healthfulness, tenderness, are those that fall in this category. And we're going to generate molecular EPDs. You're already seeing them. That's the numeric molecular values, if you will. We hope they're going to be EPDs that fit in that category. And the final one is this one up here, marker-assisted EPDs. And we have to address the question of an industry is, do we invest, the NBCEC, do we invest the resources to build a system that merges DNA data with phenotypic information? And the answer to that is yes, but only if you, the industry, build the infrastructure to get all of that data to us. Okay? If you think about how we develop this, for a new trait like healthfulness, we immediately need to establish this kind of a representation of the genetic merit of animals for them. And we'll test them, continue to test them, collect phenotypic information periodically, reassess that test. In this scenario, we're proposing, in many cases, to go from there to here, and then when we reach that point where we can explain most of the genetic variation down here, then maybe we don't need to continue to collect phenotypes. But this is something we have to continue to do for a period of time because we don't explain all of the variation with our tests. So the results are going to be EPDs, marker-assisted EPDs, molecular EPDs. The only advantage on this slide right here is they're all EPDs. Just like we had within EPD, within breed EPDs, where we said, if somebody asked us in education the question, what is an EPD, we can answer that. If somebody asks us now, what does the molecular score mean, we have to ask which one. In this case, we're talking about EPDs in every case. So does this make sense? Probably not. The reason is, why have three definitions of the one thing that we really want to predict? For selection purposes, the one thing we need to predict is the additive genetic merit of an animal. Period. One per trait. To get there, we need to start to consider organizing our resources, building the infrastructure to allow us to take that information from all these varying sources and get to that point where we can tell the industry, here is one number for that trait. This is what it means. This is how you use it. Okay? We have an opportunity in the next 3 to 5 years to take all of this confusion that comes about with different kinds of values, different kinds of numbers, and say, hey, here's how you use the tools we have available to you. Education kept coming up in all of the conversations we've heard of late relative to genetics. Education is easy here. Education is extremely difficult the further we go back in my slides. So, what I would like to propose for BIF to do is to, just like you did with the carcass, start to consider recommendations for moving to standardized reporting systems that ultimately will feed into genetic evaluations to get us to this goal. And with that, I'll close.